which may mean even of the large principal queens who tend to be proud of their constant association with him. In Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada writes, because they had been separated from Krishna for so many years, the gopis, having come along with Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda, felt intense ecstasy in seeing Krishna. No one can even imagine how anxious the gopis were to see Krishna again. As soon as Krishna became visible to them, they took him inside their hearts through their eyes and embraced him to their full satisfaction. Even though they were embracing Krishna only mentally, they became so ecstatic and overwhelmed with joy that for the time being they completely forgot themselves. The ecstatic trance which they achieved simply by mentally embracing Krishna is impossible to achieve even for great yogis constantly engaged in meditation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna could understand that the gopis were wrapped in ecstasy by embracing him in their minds. And therefore, since he is present in everyone's heart, he also reciprocated the embracing from within. Om Ajnanam Nirandhasya Dhyanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Dhanayam Tadati Swasatam Tikam Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adita Gadadara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. You see that this particular chapter, especially of Srimad Bhagavatam and chapters that are very related to Krishna and the gopis, are most relished by the most celebrated, or I can say most celebrated, celebrated, great celebrants, like the six Goswamis who are here, headed by Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Raghunath Dasa Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, and here the speaker himself, Sri Shukadeva Goswami. They relish this pastime very, very much, because they have no affinity to material attachment whatsoever. Though I'm not qualified, I'm not in their level, but I do seek the blessings of the devotees that I can enter into a glimpse, or you can say I can at least appreciate the love between Krishna and his dearmost devotees, the gopis. Usually, this kind of topic can be misinterpreted by those who have adulterated motives, but I pray to the devotees here that I sincerely can speak this topic so that we can congregationally improve our Krishna consciousness. This pastime is very, very amazing in itself, because we know that a solar eclipse was going to take place in the world. And this solar eclipse was not a common kind of solar eclipse which we see once in a while, once in every 3-4 years. This solar eclipse usually happens at the end of at the end of the yuga cycle. It's like when Lord Brahma, when he goes to sleep, during that time the solar eclipse happens, destruction takes place and so forth. So this solar eclipse happened to come at that point of time. So all the great personalities throughout the earthly planets, they came and assembled in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. That is considered a very holy place. This is because Parashuram's grace was there. So all the assembled kings, like the Pandavas, the Kauravas, the Yadus, the Matsyas, the Panchalas, and even the residents of Vrindavan, they all came assembled in this assembly. And the highlight of this assembly was that of Krishna meeting with the residents of Vrindavan, in particular the residents, the young covered damsels of Rajabhumi Sri Vrindavan. We know here, as explained here, although apparently the most inauspicious circumstances had taken place, that was the solar eclipse, but for the residents of Vrindavan, this was considered the most auspicious. Similarly, 500 years ago, this earthly planet had similar kind of eclipse, but with the moon, lunar eclipse, and that was considered very, very inauspicious. But nevertheless, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, decided to advance himself in his form as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He came as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he took birth in Navadvip Sri Mayapur under the neem trees. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire to appear during the most inauspicious time was for that, because that when there is the most inauspicious period, devotees, they have only one refuge, the take shelter of Krishna. So all the devotees of Navadvip, they all assemble in the bank of Ganges, chanting the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. They were all chanting. Why did they chant? Why did they engage in spiritual activities more intensely during this inauspicious time? So that the inauspicious effect did not touch them. By taking shelter of Krishna, all the inauspiciousness goes away. So, while the devotees were chanting, even the non-devotees, even the Muslims, who ordinarily never think of chanting the names of Krishna, they were making mockery of the devotees, and they were also starting to chant the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So the devotees were chanting the holy name of the Lord, and even the non-devotees were chanting the name of the holy name of the Lord. So, by material calculation, by astrological calculation, that period is considered most inauspicious. But for devotees, that is considered the most auspicious, because the holy name of the Lord is chanted by non-devotees and even the devotees himself. So that's why the Lord desired or advented himself on that apparently most inauspicious time, that is known as Gaur Purnima. So here we see similar kind of episode took place where there was inauspiciousness according to astrological calculation. But for the devotees, this was considered the most auspicious, because especially for the Vrindavan, residents of Vrindavan, the Rajavasis, they could not see Krishna after Krishna left them in Mathura. In fact, Krishna said to the residents of Vrindavan, after Akura took Krishna away from Vrindavan to Mathura, Krishna, in order to pacify the gopis, the damsels of Raja, he said, I will come tomorrow. But apparently, it happened so that the gopis had the opportunity to see Krishna in the Kurukshetra. For the gopis, this was considered the most auspicious, in the most inauspicious circumstances. We may consider inauspicious when our life is in difficulty, or we may consider inauspicious when our money is lost. We may consider inauspicious when our family is broken and so forth. But for a devotee, he considers inauspicious when he's not in touch with Krishna, is not in tune with Krishna consciousness. Devotees' experience in Krishna consciousness is most extraordinary, because they see that there's nothing more effective and more beautiful than the process of Krishna consciousness. Even after, especially devotees who have come from outside life, they have seen everything in outside life. But then they come and take shelter of Krishna. they really understand there's nothing more beautiful than Krishna consciousness. So for devotees, what if inauspiciousness is considered auspiciousness for the karmic? What is considered auspicious for the karmic or non-devotees is considered inauspiciousness for the devotees. Yanishaya sarabhutanam tasyam jagati samyami yasyam jagati bhutani sanisha pashakramane. What is considered night for the non-devotees is considered daytime for the devotees. And what is considered daytime for the non-devotees is considered night for the devotees. We can see in our daily life. When the karmis go to sleep, is the time when we arise, when we wake up. And by the time we go to sleep, that's when the karmis or the non-devotees are most active. The time of most active period for the non-devotees are during the time of 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. That's when the party is on. Full action is on. Friday night is on. You can go to the pub and you can expose yourself, you can get yourself drunk and you can fully express yourself. But for devotees, they are asleep. But when the karmis or the non-devotees, they go to bed at 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock, that's when the devotees arrive. They wake up and that's when they become very active. They start chanting, they start praying to the Lord. Srila Prabhupada himself, the founder, he wrote a Bhaktivedanta article on this subject matter, on this particular verse. His first Bhaktivedanta magazine, so one of the early Bhaktivedanta magazines. Who are fools? who are fools? Yeah. The non-devotees think that the devotees are fools, but the devotees actually know who are fools. This was an article written by Srila Prabhupada. So, apparently for non-devotees, it was considered the most inauspicious time because of the inauspicious effect that can have an implication in your karma. But for devotees, they took it as mercy of Krishna and they actually accepted, they embraced the inauspiciousness as the most auspicious period of time. So the gopis were very, very happy to meet Krishna and they couldn't help themselves but express their love for Krishna. Balaram, who is the elder brother of Krishna, could understand the ecstatic feelings of the gopis for Krishna, so he decided to leave the scenario. We should understand the gopis' love for Krishna is not that of the mundane love we experience in this world. The love we experience in this world is with motivation. There is some selfish motivation involved in it. And we've seen it and we've heard it. But this desire still hangs in our hearts. Basically, the material kind of love is I scratch your back, you scratch my back. If I cannot get any satisfaction from you, then I won't have nothing to do with you. This is the love we see in this world. But the love in the spiritual world is selfless love. The devotees do not think for their benefit, they think for the benefit of others. They think the benefit for Krishna. That is the beauty of the love that is experienced in the spiritual world. Everyone comes first and then I come. But in the material world, I come first and then everyone follows me behind. That is the love we see in the material world, which we do not need to really elaborately go through, which we see in our own lives, time to time, again and again. I should get this first and then everyone should follow me. Or everyone. But in spiritual world, everyone goes in front, but the devotee stays at the last. In fact, the most elevated devotees, the most advanced devotees see themselves as the last priority And other devotees as the first priority. In fact, Srimati Radharani herself, she would tell to Krishna, "Oh Krishna, this devotee is better devotee than mine, than me. Please, therefore, you should accept this devotee." That is why Radharani is considered very great, because Radharani puts herself at last and gets other devotees in front. And that is what Krishna is very, very attracted to. The love of this world and the love of the spiritual world can be compared to that of iron and metal gold. Both are metal and both have the same feeling, but the value is different. The value of the love we see in this world is perverted love, which is known as lust. But the love we see in the spiritual world is pure. It's pure like gold. The iron metal can get rusted, but gold metal never gets rusted. It always shines, it's always beautiful. So, and we see time to time again and again, when we try to fulfill the material lust, it never satisfies us. Rather, it increases the flames of material lust. And we get frustrated. As explained by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, while contemplating the objects of the senses, one develops attachment for them. From such attachment, lust develops. So the root cause of the lust of this world is contemplating on the objects of the senses. The eyes like to see things. The ears like to hear things. The tongue like to taste things. So forth. Lust cannot only be on opposite sex. Lust can be on anything which is separate from Krishna. So the tongue desires to eat McDonald's or KFC, or if you are more pious, go to a vegetarian restaurant. Or your ears are very enchanted for hearing beautiful CDs, rap music, rock and roll music, or if you're more cultured, classical music, ragas, so forth. Your eyes are enchanted to seeing things. I want to go to Paris, I want to go to Holland, Sweden, Hawaii, see beautiful television, so forth. So, the root cause of this lust is contemplation of the objects of senses. You think your ears are enchanted to hearing cinema music. Your nose is enchanted to smelling artificial fragrances. In Japan, obviously, they have a new way of getting customers. One of the ways of getting customers, their latest invention, the cutting edge of technology, is while the customer would walk in the streets next to the shop, they will create a fragrance, an aroma that the customers will smell it and they think, wow, this is such beautiful fragrance. And they will enter into the shop and be sold to the shop. this is the latest technology Japan has invented, which is soon going to go throughout the world. So, this is the root cause of lust, contemplation of the objects of the senses. And what is the result of it? The result of it is frustration. This is the result of material lust. Material lust brings to frustration. Just like in mathematics you have 1 plus 1 is 2, similarly material lust is sure to bring frustration. It is a fact. We've all been through. We've all seen it. We've all heard about it. So there's nothing really new about it. But that is not there in spiritual. In spiritual world, love is ever increasing and is always blissful. Even apparently you may not get your desired object in the spiritual world, still you're satisfied. That is the beauty. even I'll get frustrated. But in the material, if you cannot fulfill the lust, you get frustrated. But in spiritual, you can't, for some reason, you can't get the desired object you want, Krishna, still you become satisfied. That is exemplified by the gopis. And that Vipralamba Seva, that service of separation, is considered the highest spiritual ecstasy or symptom, which we cannot comprehend in our mundane, mundane knowledge or mundane mind. In regards to this, in Sri Ranga, the holy place where Ranganath, Lord Vishnu in his form of Lord, in his four-armed form resides in the bank of Kaveri in South India, this deity is a very special deity. It was worshipped by Lord Ramachandra himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shri Krishna, who appeared as Lord Ram. He worshipped this deity. And for some reason, Vibhishan, he became the ruler of Lanka after Ravana got killed. Vibhishan wanted Lord Ram to stay in Lanka and not go back to Ayodhya. And Ram couldn't do so because he had an obligation he had to fulfill to rule Ayodhya. But because Vibhishan was sincerely praying for Lord Ram to reside in Sri Lanka, in Lanka, Lord Ram gave him the Ranganath deity, which was his home worshipable deity. So this deity is a very, very ancient old deity. So in Sri Ranga, there was an annual special beautiful festival. This was a procession in the streets of Ranganath or Sri Ranga. Like just as you have Rath Yatra, where there's procession, where we take the deities on the palanquin. Similarly, on that particular day, there was a wonderful festival. And you could hear the beautiful drums beating, the trumpets being played, and the Brahmins were chanting mantras, and the girls were dancing and decorating, throwing flowers, singing. And it was the most amazing display of spiritual, you can say, beauty. And at the end of the procession, you saw the beautiful palanquin where Lord Ranganath, the Vijayamurti, or the you can say, the deity of Sri Ranganath, who travels outside of the temple to bestow his mercy. So while all this was going on, all the devotees were gazing at the deities and they couldn't help but get their eyes looking at the form of the beautiful deities. Everyone was crowding and trying to observe the beauty of the Lord. But there was one man in that crowd. All the people were pushing him, and basically he was in the midst of the crowd, in front of the deities. But what was he doing? He was a handsome man. He was quite tall. He had broad shoulders. He had big muscles and so forth. Handsome looking. With his left hand, he held an umbrella, and with his right hand, he was standing. He was standing a beautiful girl. And with his left hand, he was holding the umbrella to protect her from the sun rays. And with his right hand, he was fanning her to cool her down. And with his eyes, he was looking at the beautiful face of that beautiful girl. And all the devotees, all the residents of Sri Rangam were noticing this, and they were ridiculing him, saying, "What are you doing? Don't be a fool. Lord Ranganath is here. What are you doing?" And they were criticizing him, ridiculing him, and making him. He made a fool of himself. But nevertheless, he wasn't at all disturbed. He was in full samadhi. He was in full absorption in his service to his dear one. So, just then, Yatiraj, Srila Ramanuja Charya, he was walking by, he was going with his disciple, he was leaving the procession, he was going to his ashram. He noticed that this handsome person was constantly absorbed in this beautiful girl, and he was fanning him, and he was fanning her and holding the umbrella and looking at her right and staring at her in front of the public. I was thinking, what is going on here? What a beautiful festival going on. But this person has diverted himself. So he asked one of his servants, Dasharati, Dasharati, please go and call this person. I need to talk to him. So Dasharati went and approached this man. And he said, Ramanujacharya, the great Acharya of the Sri Sampradaya, great, he wants to see you. But because this person was fully absorbed, he couldn't hear what he was saying. So Dasharati said again and again, but still this person wasn't hearing. And then Dasharati said, Ramanujacharya, the Acharya of the Sri Sampradaya, he wants to see you. But still he was fixed in his samadhi. He wasn't, Dasharati wasn't able to break his samadhi. So he screamed. He said, Ramanujacharya wants to see you. Then he came out of his consciousness. What? What? Then he realized, who is this person who's disturbing my samadhi, disturbing my absorption, my service? And he looked with great anger, and then he saw a saintly person. He said, oh, what is it? What is the matter? Because he was very respectful to the saintly person. He said, my Guru Maharaj, Ramanujacharya wants to see you. So really? Oh, I will come. So he came and approached Ramanujacharya. He paid his obeisances to Ramanujacharya. Ramanujacharya then questioned him. He said, who are you? So this handsome person said, my name is Dhanurdas. And I live not so far away from here. I live in a village. And my occupation is that I'm a wrestler of the king of that village. Then Ramanujacharya says, don't you know what you're doing in front of the public? How is it that you are holding an umbrella, fanning and gazing at this girl in front of the whole public? Aren't you ashamed of it? And Dhanurdas said, well, I have seen everything in this world. I have seen all the beauty of this world. But one thing I haven't seen. I haven't seen the beautiful eyes that are those of this girl whose name is, I forget the name of the girl. I haven't seen anything more beautiful than the eyes of this girl. And Ramanujacharya said, who is she? And Dhanurdas said, well, she's not my husband, she's not my wife, but she is a kind of a prostitute, but nevertheless, you know, I like her so much, I like her beauty and her eyes. Ramanujacharya said, if that is so, Dhanurdas, that you're attracted to the eyes of this girl, then if I can show you something more beautiful, will you give up her eyes and accept someone else's eyes? And Dhanurdas said, well, as I said to you, I have seen nothing more beautiful than these eyes of the girl. But if you can show me eyes which are more beautiful than her, I will surely accept it. So, Ramanujacharya said, if that is so, then you come to my ashram in this evening, and I will show you something which is going to be most extraordinary. So Dhanadas, he immediately paid obeisances. He said, yes, I will come this evening. And he immediately ran to attend in his absorbed service. He held the umbrella on the head of the beautiful girl with his left hand, with his right hand, fanned the girl, and he was staring at her throughout the rest of the day. So in the evening, as the evening approached, Dhanadas came to the house, to the ashram of Ramanujacharya. Ramanujacharya noticed Dhanadas. Said, oh, now I will show you something which is most extraordinary. Please come with me. So Ramanujacharya took Dhanadas with him to the temple of Sri Ramana. They went through the seven gates. They crossed over the seven gates and entered into the temple room of Sri Ramana. As they were coming into the room where Ramanath resides, Sri Ramanujacharya was praying to the Lord. Oh Lord, please show your compassion. Please let this very simple, wretched heart be attracted to you. Please, oh Ramanath, please bestow your kind mercy upon him. So Ramanujacharya took Dhanadas inside the interior of the temple room. Just then, it was a very auspicious moment. That's when the Sandhya Aarti was taking place, the evening Aarti. So, the pujari, he was offering the lamp to Ranganath. The pujari started showing the beautiful lamp at the toenails of Ranganath. He started showing the beautiful feet of Ranganath. Ramanujacharya said to Dhanadas, Dhanadas, please look at the fire. Look at where the flames are going, being offered. So Dhanadas was just watching. And the flames came towards the thigh of the Lord, towards the knee, the thigh, to the waist of the Lord. And then the beautiful broad chest of the Lord, the arms of the Lord, the neck of the Lord. And then finally, the flames were circumambulating the beautiful golden eyes of Ramananji. While the flames were circumambulating the beautiful eyes of Ramananji, then Dhanadas, he saw the beautiful eyes of Ramananji and immediately melted. Immediately started crying in spiritual ecstasy. And after the aarti was done, then Dhanadas fell at the lotus feet of Ramanujacharya. And he said, oh Ramanujacharya, you have saved me from the dark well of material existence. You have shown me something which is most beautiful, most extraordinary. You have help me get rid of the perverted material love and show me the true spiritual love. I'm ever indebted to you. He said, now, seeing the beautiful eyes of Ranganath, I have no more attraction to seeing anything of this material world, even my girlfriend's eyes. I have no desire. I have no desire whatsoever. I simply want to accept you as my spiritual master. Please be kind upon me. So Ramanujacharya showed his causeless mercy on Dhanadas. So this message, this beautiful pastime was related to many devotees. And for some reason, this girl, the friend of Dhanadas, she heard about the transformation of Dhanadas. Because she was pious in her heart, she also took shelter of Ramanujacharya and became a disciple of Ramanujacharya. So Ramanujacharya instructed them, both of them, to get married. So they both got married, and Ramanuja Charya taught and told them to lead a very exemplary Grihastha life. And they were a very exemplary Grihastha life. Ramanuja Charya would continuously praise the disciple of his, Dhanudas, and his wife, because of their unflinching devotion to Krishna and their exemplary as a Grihastha. And in fact, Ramanuja Charya grew great fondness to Dhanudas, that usually it used to be after taking bath in Kaveri, Ramanuja Charya would walk back to the ashram and he would have Dasharati help him, because that time Ramanuja Charya was growing old. So he would have Dasharati, he would hold on to the shoulders of Dasharati and walk back to the ashram. But because he grew great fondness to Dhanudas, he replaced that service of Dasharati and gave that service to Dhanudas. He would every day hold his hand on the shoulders of Dhanudas and walk back to the ashram. Some of the close disciples of Ramanuja Charya started becoming critical towards Ramanuja Charya himself, their own Guru Maharaj. They were making gossip and they were saying, how could Ramanuja Charya do such a thing? Be very affectionate to such a low-born disciple of his. So they were starting being very critical, and some of them were indeed brahmacharis, and they were criticizing Ramanuja Charya on the act of showing compassion on Dhanudas, showing great affection to Dhanudas. Ramanuja Charya could understand the vibe going in through the atmosphere, and he could understand the problem the disciples had. In fact, so Ramanuja Charya wanted to teach a lesson to the disciples, his disciples. One day, Ramanuja Charya said, "Oh, this Dhanudas, he's a low-born, he's a malacha, he is unqualified." And the disciples were like, "Oh yes, now Guru Maharaj understands. This is what we were thinking so long. Now Guru Maharaj understands what we are thinking. He's come to proper conclusion. Oh, how shame that he didn't realize this earlier. But nevertheless, he's come to proper understanding now." So anyway, Ramanuja Charya said to the brahmacharya, "I want to show you that they are so greedy and they're so lusty." So he said, "This night, what you should do is, you should ask Dhanudas to come and see me. While he comes and sees me, you should go and steal the jewelry of his wife." And the disciples said, "Yes, that's a good idea. That's a brilliant idea." So that night, the disciples reported to Dhanudas saying that Ramanuja Charya wants to see you. So Dhanudas said, "Oh really? Ramanuja Charya wants to see me." So immediately rushed over to see Ramanuja Charya. Then the disciples saw that Dhanudas' wife, because the time went by, midnight, and his wife was obviously getting tired, so she took rest. While she was taking rest, the brahmacharis and the disciples of Ramanuja Charya took the advantage. So they went to steal the jewelry of his wife, of Dhanudas' wife. So they stole the jewelry of the half-side of Dhanudas' wife. But then Dhanudas' wife turned over, moved aside. So the disciples thought, "Oh, she must be awake, better be run away." But they ran away. And then later on, Ramanuja Charya finished discussion with Dhanudas, they talked and all this. Dhanudas walked back to his home, and Ramanuja Charya and the disciples went and met Ramanuja Charya. Now Ramanuja Charya said, "Please come over." So they all went together And they were all hiding, and they were watching what was this scenario going to be. So when Dhanadas entered the home, then his wife related, you know, he said, Ramanujacharya's disciples came and took my jewelry. I think so my Guru Maharaj wanted the jewelry because there must be some shortage of treasury. So that's why they might have taken the jewelry. And Dhanadas said, well, why did you give the other half of your jewelry? Why did you give the other side of the bangles and so forth? She said, well, I turned over, but they ran away because they were afraid that I was away. Dhanadas got so upset. Dhanadas was so upset with his wife. He said, how could you do this? For the service of Guru Maharaj, why did you move? You should have left the disciples take the other side of the jewelry. And Dhanadas was so upset. And Ramanujacharya said, look, he pointed out to the disciples, look at this disciple who you say that he is very low born and so forth. Look how elevated they are. They are more elevated than you. The other day, I ripped your coffins and you were fighting over the coffins, the loincloth. But now you look, they are fighting, not fighting because their jewelry got stolen. They are upset because the jewelry were not taken away for the service of the Guru Maharaj. Look how elevated they are. They're not at all attached because they have intense faith and they have that intense attraction to Krishna. This is the beautiful moral of this pastime is that when one has that deep attachment to Krishna, then one's material desires go down. Just like if you have a scale. If you put something which is heavy on one scale, the other scale goes upwards. The other scale which is very heavy comes down. Similarly, if you have Krishna, if you have deep attachment to Krishna, then the scale will obviously go down and something which is material will go upwards and becomes light and goes away. Prabhupada gives this example. Prabhupada would say that he mentioned in one of the lectures that just as you fly in the airplane, as you fly in the airplane, then the houses become smaller and smaller till it becomes like a matchbox. Similarly, your attraction for Krishna, as you deepen your attraction to Krishna, as you go deeper and deeper, as you go higher and higher in Krishna consciousness, then the material desires become insignificant like matchbox and basically dead. That is what we are all trying to work on, is our deep attachment to Krishna. That is the purpose of the Krishna conscious movement, and that is our focus in Krishna conscious movement. Doesn't matter whatever situation we may be in, doesn't matter whether we are brahmacharis or grihasthas or in between brahmacharya and grihastha. What is that ashram known as?
Brahmashtra.
Doesn't matter if you're in that situation, or doesn't matter if you're a male or a female. Doesn't matter if you're being most ridiculed or criticized, or you're being most praised for, but your main goal is Krishna consciousness. That is what we have to continuously focus on. By being Krishna conscious, the fact is, we can overcome all these tribulations. These tribulations become very, very insignificant, very minor problems to one's life. But if one is not Krishna consciousness, then even the slightest tribulation becomes the greatest hindrance to your life. That is why Sri Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, one who has great attachment to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one who has that love for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one has that faith in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then the most difficult thing becomes very easy to accomplish.
But one who doesn't have that attachment to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that faith to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then the most easy thing becomes very difficult to accomplish. So as you grow your faith in Krishna consciousness, things will become easy, that's for sure. We should not think that we have desires, so we just keep Krishna away and we'll try to fulfill desires and things will be sweet and honeymoon. No, that's not the reality. Even if you do activities which are not related to Krishna and based on your own desire, still there is difficulties. Still there will be difficulties. There is difficulty in any sphere of life. There is difficulty in spiritual life. There is difficulty in material life. But the difference is there. The difficulty in material life degrades our life to hellish life. But the difficulty in spiritual life gives us liberation, spiritual emancipation. Tapo divyam putraka yena satvam sudye bhava brahma sokyam panantam. That this divine austerity, that this divine difficulty you undergo in spiritual life is brahma sokyam panantam. It gives you unlimited happiness. But the difficulty you go through material life is like that, the example Prabhupada would use, that of an ass going after the grass. Meanwhile, the ass, while he's trying to follow the dangling carrot or the grass, he has to carry the heavy load on his back. But unlike in spiritual difficulties, when one undergoes spiritual difficulties, that brings about immense spiritual bliss. That is exemplified by the gopis themselves. They went through so much difficulty. They were not able to meet Krishna for so many years till they met Krishna in Kurukshetra. But nevertheless, Brahma Sokhya Pranata, it brought about the greatest transcendental, unlimited happiness. So we should try to understand this with reasonings, with proper understanding, with the help of the Shastra. By getting the guidance and the help of the Shastra, we can see the reality more clearly. We can see the whole picture. If we do not take the aid of the Shastra, then we will not take the, we will not have a clear picture. We will see in a biased viewpoint. You will just see in one side of viewpoint. But if you have the help of the Shastra, then you can see the reality of the material hemisphere and the reality of the spiritual hemisphere. It's true that there are difficulties in spiritual life, but what is the result of it? Brahma Sokhyam Panantam. It brings about unlimited transcendental happiness. You may not experience it now, but the effect is there. You may not realize it. The effect is already there in each and every individual. Everyone is experiencing this unlimited happiness in spiritual life. You may not realize it. You'll realize it when you go to material hemisphere. Then you realize what you're really missing. So it's not a matter, you know, it's a matter of realizing this yourself also, you know. So you, as you surrender to Krishna more and more, Krishna will give you more knowledge, Krishna will give you more understanding by which you can understand the futility of material happiness, the futility of material existence. So, thank you very much. Are there any comments or questions in this regard? We should try and never, whatever we can in spiritual life. Sometimes we have bumpy roads. We do get bumpy roads. There's no exception. It happens to everyone. And we should realize this. Things have to be taken maturely. We do have bumpy roads. We have bumpy roads not only with your desires, even with sometimes with the authorities and so forth. But you know, you should see what is your focus. Take shelter of the Shastra, take shelter of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada has given everything to us. Then, over time, you realize, when you go through all this difficulty, and over time you realize, actually, how foolish was I? You realize it. You just realize it. You think, oh my God, I was crying for such a pity object. You realize it. Oh, I've created unnecessary problems with my authorities. Or I've created unnecessary problems with my friends. I've dumped my friend in spiritual life. You realize this. This is the beautiful process of Krishna consciousness. There is indeed great wealth in Krishna consciousness. You just gotta be patient, as Rupa Goswami says. Utsaha nishaya dharya. This dharya is very important. Nowadays, because our consciousness is very, very Kali Yuga type, we want fast food. We want to eat now. So that's why you have fast food restaurants, more popular than eating at your home. Oh, you're hungry? Just go to McDonald's. Just go to this restaurant. Oh, they will give you everything. 30 days you can learn philosophy, you can learn English, you can learn everything instant. It has to be instant. So there's no quality of patience within ourselves. And that's not what we should do in our spiritual life. We should be very patient in our spiritual life. If you're patient, which is the essential ingredient, utsaha means enthusiasm, determination, and patience. If you're patient, surely you get your desired result. If you're impatient, you cannot achieve anything of this world or even the next. So, be patient. Please be patient. And the beauty of this Krishna consciousness is that, as explained in this purpose, is that this Krishna consciousness is made very simple for all of us. It's not complicated. As explained here, the gopis, the favor the gopis got was most extraordinary, because they got that favor which even the mystic yogis, they can't even achieve. The mystic yogis, they meditate on Paramatma for so many lifetimes and years and tribulations. They finally realize they can see Paramatma. Just see the form of Paramatma. But they can't relate with Paramatma. They can't serve it. They can't have that beautiful interaction. Just as the gopis, they were able to meditate on Krishna and get Krishna within their heart and embrace him. The yogis couldn't do this. This is the beauty of Krishna consciousness. It's made so simple and so easy for all of us. This is all by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So if you just pray to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu, they make things very easy for you. Otherwise, if you do not have that, if you do not take shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu, as I said earlier, most easy things become very difficult to accomplish. Okay? Thank you very much. Sri Ramchandra Shrimad Bhagavatam.